Hey, Paradox. So, those are them Beastie Boy fellows I heard so much about, huh?
I guess. It's their song Intergalactic.
Intergalactic, right on. Yeah, I kind of missed a lot of the 90s, I think, just because where I got saved, they didn't really like you listening to the radio and going to the movies or bowling or anything like that. So, there's a lot of groups and stuff from the 90s I think I'm just not that aware of, apparently. Well, we already know what I was doing in the late 90s from the last time we talked.
Yeah, you went into some of your story and testimony and...
Yeah, so I think we should hear a lot more about what was going on with you, both before you knew the Lord, and I know you've had a lot of paranormal experiences and things that have helped shape the direction and the ministry, the topics you're interested in dealing with, right?
Yeah, well, what we covered last time, I could go into that where I saw a gray when I was 5, and we mainly just focused on people getting to know who you are. And so, yeah, I guess this time we're going to do more of my history. So where do we start?
Well, this is sort of an Alien Resistance exclusive, though, then, because, I mean, I know you've done interviews on the internet with people, but mostly that's more about your theology and your writings. But what I think has never really been gone into in detail is your actual history of experiences.
Yeah, I've had a lot more experiences than I've actually covered on any interviews.
So aside from seeing an alien gray when you were young, what are some other paranormal experiences that you remember from a very young age?
Well, seeing that gray happen when I was about 5, I think it was the next year when I was 6, I saw what seemed to be some sort of ghost. It's interesting as I was a Christian at that point, as I had asked Jesus to save me when I was 6. I was going to a Christian school, and they talked about hell, and they talked about how you need Jesus to save you. And I don't know that I really totally understood it, but I did believe, you know, in God. And I do remember praying one day and asking Jesus to save me, come into my heart and save me. And I remember I went and I told my mom and a friend of hers that was a babysitter of mine. I was in the bedroom, my bedroom, on my bed when I did it, and I went out in the living room and I told them. It was like, oh, well, that's cool. That I prayed when I go to bed every night, and it was sometime after that there was a carnival. They had like a House of Mirrors, a traveling carnival, and they'd set up, and they also had a haunted house ride you could go on. It actually had a track that went through a little portable building of some sort. And me and my brother went on that, and I had a feeling like, well, I shouldn't really go on this, you know, because it's a dark, evil, bad thing. But we ended up going in anyway. But I actually felt like it was kind of a bad idea. I remember from, you know, being a Christian, this was a dark thing. I wasn't really sure. So we went on the ride, and it was, you know, various things, and it wasn't really that scary, and, you know, but I was 6, you know, I'm sure I startled at some things. But towards the end of the ride, I remember it very clearly. My brother was sitting in front of me, in the seat in front of me, and I was in the back seat at the very back of the ride. And I looked over to the left, and there was like this gruesome-looking hand there on the back of the cart that was moving, that was going with it. And it was very realistic-looking, this gruesome-looking hand. It was just a ride, and I don't think I'd seen any like people in that were part of the ride or anything like that. It looked so real-looking, but I remember it didn't strike me as being fake at all. There was something really weird about it, and I just looked back And it's like I looked back to in front of me, and I didn't want to look behind me to see what was on the other end of that. And I just looked down, and I just started praying and asking God to make it go away, whatever it was. Oh. And I was just praying for God to make it go away. And I looked back when I opened my eyes, and it was gone. So, you know, I don't know for sure what that was, but I remember feeling at the time very weird about it. Like, it didn't... There was something about the experience where I didn't just think it would be some dude in a costume. Whatever I did see was so convincing and weird, with his hand, like with flesh coming off of it or something like that, that it freaked me out. I know I asked my brother later if he saw anything, and he didn't see anything like that. He hadn't been looking back. But as I was a Christian, and I remember praying about it, and whatever it was, it did go away, whether it was a person or something paranormal. But it's interesting. I no one told me, really, to do that or anything, but I did just pray about it.
That's interesting that before you even got on it, you had what sounds like a genuine sense of conviction from the Holy Spirit that this is not the sort of thing you should be participating in.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where or what it was. I must have learned at the Christian school or something, but it just did seem like something dark, so I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you somehow knew to call on God and call on Jesus to make it go away from the beginning. That's probably a very important lesson that kids aren't being taught.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing, is I just prayed about it, prayed to God, you know, make it go away. So that was one experience. But then there were other experiences that were happening, I think, before and after that, too, that it might be kind of hard to explain, but they built up into something larger that happened when I was 7.
So what started happening then?
Well, I started having what, when I look back now, seem to be false visions of fallen angels that were impersonating people I knew and my family. And I guess, really, the big event that happened was them impersonating people. There was a fight, a disagreement or something that happened. It's like, I don't exactly want to get into every detail about it, but just in general, I'd say the really big thing was I ended up getting taken to a hospital where there was a meeting with a doctor, and there was a fallen angel there impersonating my mother, and getting left there, and the doctor asked me questions, and it was interesting because the alien thing got brought up, and it seemed like this fallen angel experience is trying to claim I was like crazy for some stuff I was saying. And what happened in this false vision is I got left at a hospital, and being 7 years old, that I was going to have electroshock. And so this experience continued on overall for about a week, where I had, in this experience, electroshock on an outpatient basis for every day for, like, I guess maybe 5 or 6 days.
You remember feeling shocked with electricity? You remember being
in
a room or on a table?
I remember all of that. I was there and left at the hospital. There was an aide in this false vision that took me by the hand, and I was freaking out some inside, but I was being really calm, and I had stopped talking, and I was taken up in an elevator, and he was holding on in my hand. He wouldn't let go. I've been holding on to my wrist, and he took me up to a room, and there was a bed, and I ended up getting strapped onto the bed, and there were a couple of aides there in the vision talking, and I mean, it all felt completely real, and I was panicked, I think, beyond belief. About at the point where I think they kind of strapped me onto the bed, I started realizing that something really bad was going to happen. One of them was talking about something that was going to happen where I wouldn't remember anything. And another one of them was kind of mean. I remember I started realizing they were going to do something really bad to me, and I started screaming for help, and they got upset that I was screaming for help, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs for help, you know, somebody help me. And so I wasn't sure exactly what they were going to do, but I was sure it must be really bad. And I screamed like that, and of course I thought the entire thing that happened was completely physically real. I was absolutely terrified.
So you said that you thought this was real, but I know you're...
It's not my view now, but maybe I should just go into the rest of that. But, because I was screaming for help, and somebody, another doctor, came and, like, looked over the paperwork, wanted to know whose patient I was and everything. And when he came in, I stopped screaming, but then I didn't really say anything. It's like he looked over the paperwork, and I think he asked how old I was, and I told him I was 7. He seemed to think I might be like 10 or 11 or something, but I wasn't. And I guess everything was in order, because then he just left, and then it's like I couldn't believe he just left. And I was tied down to this, you know, bed, table thing. But yeah, I remember it now. But electroshock causes grand mal seizure. I mean, there was a syringe, and there was then not being able to move and not being able to say anything. And I was trying to ask for help when the original doctor came in. He said they were going to help me, and I remember they gave me some sort of drug, and I think they put something in my mouth, and they were doing something, and my eyes closed, and then I couldn't see anything, but I was still awake. And then when the electroshock happened, it was just, like, bright white. I don't know if there was really pain, but there was something painful about it, but just everything was white, and then, I mean, it's just like everything in my body tensed up all at once, but at least that's my understanding. I just remember it was white and just white. And I woke up later in a room, and one of the aides that had been, these were both male aides, there's two of them, and one of them that had been kind of teasing me beforehand and upsetting me, molested me while I was in like a recovery bed.
The hospital bed.
Yeah, he molested me, and he was saying some insulting things I don't think I quite understood. But he was doing that on the sly, but then someone came in that was like a maid or something for the room, and then he stopped real quick, but she saw that he had been doing something messing with me. And I guess the interesting thing about that is I couldn't scream, I couldn't talk, I couldn't move. I'm not sure if the term's dysphagia, but whatever it was post-recovery, I was just kind of vegetative. I could think, and I could think about wanting to scream or say something or move, but I actually couldn't do so. I wasn't tied down or anything at that point, but I absolutely couldn't do anything about it. It was like I was just locked in my mind, and I could think things, but I couldn't say or do anything or move or anything. Anyway, the maid came in, and then that stopped, and then later there was a meeting with some sort of child psychologist trying to get me to talk about whether something happened. I wasn't talking at all. It's like I couldn't talk. Really, I couldn't say anything. It's like I just wasn't talking, because I couldn't. And it's not I wanted to, but I couldn't actually say anything.
Is there any record of this hospital visit or what?
No, there's not. That was the first time, and it's like there was a week of that. I mean, it happened like 5 or 6 times.
Daily?
I would estimate, yeah, like every day for during a week period. But the thing was, like, I couldn't talk some of my own volition. It's like it seemed to kind of come and go. Like, I guess if it got several hours or whatever away from it, and I'm not sure how long it, I would get to a point where it's like if somebody asked me a direct question, I could answer, but only if it was a very definite answer, and sometimes I couldn't answer. But I mean, there were problems. Like, I can remember being hungry and being really hungry, and like there being, you know, dinners, like go to the table, so I go to the table and there being food in front of me and I wanted to eat. If someone told me I could eat, I could eat. But if no one actually told me I could eat, I couldn't. And so I'd be sitting there, and it's like people, I guess, thought it was being belligerent or something. It's like, I'm not eating. Well, I'm sitting there, and I'm hungry, you know, like, my stomach hurts, I'm hungry, and I got food right in front of me, and it smells really good, and I can't eat it unless somebody tells me to.
Why wouldn't you just reach forward and pick it up?
I don't know. I mean, I just knew that's what happened. But it was definitely not pleasant. It was very frightening. But at least for that week there, I mean, there was things like that happened where I'd be hungry and there'd be food right there but I couldn't eat, and then nobody was telling me to, and then finally they just you know, tell me, you know, something not going to eat, well then just, you know, go to bed or whatever. There's times I was thirsty and couldn't get anything to drink. And I remember there's at least, I think, a couple times during that where I needed to go to the bathroom and I couldn't do anything about that and just ended up wetting my pants. Like, a lot of pain, really having to go, and eventually just things just letting loose on their own. Because I couldn't take myself and no one told me to. And I think it was after maybe the second time that happened, people started telling me to periodically do that or make sure I did. But that was very, you know, painful and humiliating. I remember there were nurses at the hospital and they were kind of mean to me or seemed resentful. And I guess what I'd have to say is as a 7-year-old, these were some really dark experiences of things I had never experienced before. But there was some stuff that was definitely torturous or deprivation about it. There was definitely a lot of abusive stuff going on with it. And this was, I believe, all of fallen angelic, false vision experiences, but at the time it all seemed real and seemed to involve family members. And that's what I thought it was at the time when it happened. But these are memories that I lost. Because these are memories I didn't have until my 20s.
You said in the past that you had amnesia of this part of your life.
That's right.
Do you know how or when this whole week of experience or week of vision ended? Any markers?
It was the summer when I was 7 is when it happened.
But you weren't aware that all this had happened to you until much later in life. You don't remember the experience. Like, when you were 9, you didn't think 2 years ago I had this happening to me.
No, but what did happen, what I could have told you when I was 9 is I don't remember much that happened before I was 7. And if you had asked me at a certain point when I was 7 or 8, I would have told you I couldn't remember anything prior than a few months. So let me kind of reframe that. Is that after this happened, I got total amnesia of anything that had happened prior in my life. Once this experience was done, I had no memories of my life.
You just went home or wherever? You went home a tabula rasa?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I can remember now, the end of the experience, is like I woke up in the hospital and been over there, like, I guess overnight, and I went home. And that's the thing. It was on an outpatient basis. I had been in the vision home throughout it. But at the end of it, yeah, it's like I didn't know who anyone was. It's like in the way of having memories of them, but I knew who people were in, like, defining them. So let me give you an example. For instance, I could tell you that's a pencil, but even though I was going into second grade, I couldn't remember any time I'd ever used a pencil. And I could tell you who a person was. You know, I could tell you, that's my mom or something, or have it defined by context to know that's who she was, but I couldn't remember any memories of her. Or other people, other family, friends. I had no memory of it. And the other thing is I had a terrible foreboding of trying to talk about it. And I think one of the last things that actually happened that was part of the vision experience was someone telling me that it was forbidden to talk about anything that had happened before. A fallen angel impersonating a parent had said that. And so one of the last things that happened, and this was after the amnesia point, was to say we can't talk about the past. So it was like forbidden, it was like a forbidden rule for me to talk about the past. And then I had this terrible foreboding and fear, so I didn't know exactly what had happened, but that I couldn't talk about it. I didn't want to ask about it. I was afraid for some reason. And so it was almost like living life in kind of a trance state. They wake up one day and you're 7 years old and you have no memory of any events prior in your life. You're just
starting over.
Walk into life 7 years old with a 7-year-old body in a situation that's unfamiliar to you. It's like the beginning of your life. It's like the day you're born, but you're 7 years old and no memories of anything that happened prior. And at that point, there was a move that happened. But you know, from what I remember now, it was like I just kind of got very quiet, didn't talk as much. But I remember things like sibling wanting to play a game with me that was like, you know, little kids will have they make up games and they'll have like a name for that game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to play a game with me and I didn't know what it was. It was like some game we played with figurines, like a particular story we'd play out or something with, little superhero figurines and things like that and Barbies. And I didn't know what it was.
You didn't know the rules of the game that you've been playing with him?
For years, yeah. They like, want me to play, and it's like, well, how do you play that? Well, what do you mean, how do you play that? You know how to play that.
What about favorite movies or songs?
There's a good example of that. It kind of comes in later. There was a point where I saw a movie for what I believed was the first time, and it was The Court Jester. I don't know what the deal was, if I was homesick or something, but there had been some videos that were in a box that were gotten out of storage. And they were all brand new to me, and I didn't remember having ever seen them before. And this must have been when I was 8... I would guess. Going on 9, maybe? I'm not sure. It was after some of the amnesia had started wearing off, but yeah, it was The Court Jester, and I remember going to my sibling, and I'm like, oh, you gotta see this movie. It's the coolest movie. And putting it on, and they're like, what do you mean? I've seen that a million times. You watch that, and that's like used to be your favorite movie. But I was talking to them like it was brand new and I'd never seen it before. And it was weird watching it for the first time because I had this odd feeling watching it almost like I knew what was going to happen next. It was really strange. It was a strange feeling watching it for the first time. I loved it, but it's like I almost kind of knew what was going to happen. It seemed so familiar, but yet I could never remember having seen it before. But that's kind of jumping ahead, because I guess the key point there is I, as far as I can tell, I had total amnesia for about 9 months, to where I couldn't remember anything that happened prior to that point. And I also wasn't aware of what had happened. I couldn't remember the electroshock. That's what I'm saying, is I woke up in a hospital bed and there was nothing that I could remember from prior, but I knew what things were. Like, whenever I went into second grade, I remember a little girl asking me if I could read, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, and she hands me a book, and I start reading, and she's like, are you kidding me? You pulling my leg? You read really well. It's like, okay, I can read. But I couldn't remember learning how to read. I wasn't even sure that I could, but apparently I could.
Were there any teachers or babysitters that considered this odd or noticed any change in you?
Well, I changed schools that year, so apparently not. Apparently people thought I was pretty quiet, I think for the most part. For a babysitter, there was a babysitter I had that I, you know, found out later. It's like she used to babysit me a lot. But I remember before moving, meeting up with her briefly, she gave me a little porcelain figurine of a cat holding a chalkboard that said, I love you, on it. And everyone was talking about her and everything, and she was really upset and crying as we moving out of state. I didn't know who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found out years later that she used to babysit me like 3 or 4 times a week for at least 6 months. She'd stay overnight and babysit, and actually she even used to sleep in my bed with me a lot when I was like 5 or 6, I believe, 5. So, you know, she'd actually sleep in the bed with me. It's like she was like really close.
Family, obviously.
Yeah, she was someone I should have known who she was, but I think she'd moved away, and I only saw her one time after the electroshock and after the amnesia, and it was as we were leaving and moving. I only saw her once, and it's like I didn't know really who she was.
She had an obvious affection for, memories of you, and you didn't know who she was. So
No, it was just mysterious, but that's the thing. It's like I almost was just kind of tranced out by my entire life, in a way. Looking back at how I felt, I don't know that I could have possibly described it. It's like, I mean, how do you explain that to someone? It's what it's like to have total amnesia, but to be 7 and everyone around you is acting like life is going on as normal. And you just kind of play along. You're kind of forced to play along. And you feel like you can't ask about it. First off, because as part of the vision, it was forbidden. And second off, because you got this just foreboding of danger if you ask about it. And so, yeah, it was just this playing along that I went into, and it was after 9 months, you know, I don't think anyone, I do think people noticed there were some problems I had, but it was 9 months before the first memory came back. And I remember what it was, because I was in second grade. I'd been through three different schools at that point, just in a year from moving and things. And I was running on a track for PE, and I could remember being smaller and running and falling down, scraping both my knees. And the thing is, I want to tell you how it felt, was it felt like it, I didn't know what it was. Okay, it was a memory from before, but it's like I kept careful track over everything that happened that I could remember. And whether it was something that happened when I was awake or was something that happened that was a dream, you know, I could tell you every dream I'd had for those 9 months, and I could tell you the stuff that happened in my life for those 9 months, keeping very close track of all of it. I mean, because that was all I had when it came to memories. And so when I was running on the track and I started remembering this, I didn't know what it was. I'm like, well, that's never happened to me that I can remember, and in the last 9 months, and that's also not a dream that I've had that I know of. And it really struck me, this is something from before.
Before,
yeah. And after that...
Did other memories start coming back?
Yeah, other memories started coming back in pieces. And I was able to tell, okay, this is something from before. And when I get a snippet of sometimes I'd ask a sibling or a parent, is like, hey, did we ever do this or that, you know, like go fishing or something. I put it in a way that was like, well, yeah, we used to do this or that, and, you know, where we used to live before we moved. And so... I'd get other people talking about it, and then that would sometimes help bring things back, but I was always doing that on the sly. But I would lay awake and say, I don't think this is normal. But I didn't know entirely to think it wasn't normal. That what comparison did I have? But I remember I used to, when I'd go to bed at night, I'd lay awake for like an hour sometimes, just going over memories. They'd come back and piecing them together, trying to piece them together. I'd have something that would come back from a certain daycare center, and I'd have something else that came back from that daycare center. Like I'd have a memory of, well, you know, laying on a mat, having to take a nap. And just to simplify it, and like the older kids would be going by out to play. And I also remembered other times where I was the older kid going out to play, and there were little kids laying on the mats taking a nap. And so, you know, it's like these memories were totally disconnected, but from this, looking at the same location and looking at the context, I was able to piece together, okay, wait, that must have been when I was younger, and then this must have been when I was older. And so, you know, I was a littler kid, and this is when I was a bigger kid. And so that's what I did a lot of the time from when I was about 8 to when I was about 10, is I was having memories come back, and I didn't really think that much about it. It was kind of like, I didn't know it wasn't normal entirely.
You didn't know that every other child you played with or met in school was not also doing this mental activity at night, or of you have a jigsaw puzzle almost of pieces you're collecting that are your real memories, and you're having to labor through putting them in chronological order based on context.
Yeah, and they were really disconnected to where, I mean, I know by the time I got to be a preteen, like you just asked me, I could say, I don't really remember much from before when I was 7, but I also could remember things from before I was 7, but they never had that continuity to them, that contiguous memory of events that had happened after that.
Is that still true in your life?
Oh, at this point, I think there's a lot that's been put together and in close enough order, but yeah, to some extent, yeah, I still couldn't tell you exactly where some things fit in, or it would be a guess based on years of piecing it together as to where something fit in. Actually, it wasn't that long ago. One piece of an earliest memory fit together. So I asked my mom about a daycare, so I remember where it was always cold, and I don't know. I remember walking around, spending a lot of time alone, but it seemed like it was always cold. It was always indoors, and I described the building, and it was like really long. It wasn't that wide, but it was pretty long. And she remembered, and she told me that was overseas when you must have been like 3 when you were at that place, and suddenly some things clicked. I remember a lady getting mad at me once. She was saying something to me, and I couldn't understand what she was saying, and she was asking, I believe what she was asking was where my mittens were, and I had no idea what she was saying, and she got upset at me, and finally someone else came over and, like, kind of intervened with the problem, and she asked me where my gloves were. And so I told her they're over here, and I had my gloves, but it's like some lady with a funny accent was asking me where my mittens were, and I didn't know what she was talking about. So it's like, yeah, okay. So that was something that happened when I was very young, and I had never been able to fit that in and figure out when or where that was. So, yeah, I'd say it's been a very manual piecing together process. It just doesn't come naturally on those things. But at least a lot of the memories came back. But of the memories that came back when I was, started coming back between when I was 8 and 10, the electroshock memory, that did not come back. However, one thing that did come back in that time was of the gray. I saw that happen when I was 10, and I wrote it down in my diary. I think right after I turned 10, I wrote that down as something I remembered, something that came back. But yeah, I was going through this process for years of memories coming back and didn't really realize what the deal was. And after the memories came back, it just kind of all faded together, to where I didn't used to have memories, was just something that kind of got suppressed. It is true, you know, and it took a long time to realize that wasn't normal, and, you know, it did happen to where these memories were coming back, but I let go at some point. You know, enough memories came back that I started being more normal, feeling more normal, everything got more normal, and so I just kind of let it go as being like something in the past. I didn't really think about it, but that was there growing up, and I certainly remember that period when I had amnesia. I know I got picked on a lot. I wasn't really, along with other kids, there was a lot of things I didn't understand. And then it's interesting, as I've gotten older, to find out it seems like I had Asperger's.
On top of this.
Yeah, that this didn't just happen, that I also had Asperger's and this happened. And so, you know, I can remember I didn't seem to have such a hard time socially, like in first grade. I mean, I don't think I had a ton of friends, but I had some friends, but I think there was a lot that I had a harder time understanding socially. I had amnesia, and it's like, it made it worse, so I was like second grade and everything. It's a pretty dark time, but as memories came back, it got better, so I'm not sure. There's a lot more I could probably say on that, but eventually stuff just seemed to normalize out. It's like I could remember some stuff, and I just kind of let it go, and you know, kids live in the present.
Yeah. So at what point do you just pick up as if your life is normal and you start moving forward? What happened, or how old were you when you just really realized, I'm just living my life, everything's normal and okay? Or did you ever begin to feel you had a normal, straight-ahead walk going with you in life?
I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at there, what you're looking for.
You said things that just started to normalize, and you accepted, and the memories were more or less all together. Kids live in the present. So what happened when you started just living your life and moving forward?
Well, I guess after the memories came back, I got more normalized. But I definitely had some problems. And that's the thing, is like I didn't really know stuff had happened to me, but I definitely had some problems going into preteen, early teen years. You know, there's a whole lot I could go into with my life story that, I mean, I just don't know. I really want to get into all of it here as we're kind of talking about the paranormal experiences. So that was what I believe was a paranormal experience of false visions caused by fallen angels. But at the time, growing up, you know, I think somehow that was still, you know, locked away inside. And, yeah, I thought it was actual people that had done that to me, but I don't think it really was. And I guess another reason I've come to that conclusion is the stuff that happened when I was a teenager, which I know I've told you some about that.
Like you started having other visions of people in your life that turned out were questionable or may not have been reality, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what is kind of getting out of order in how this was pieced together. I guess it's hard to follow the flow maybe of not understanding these things, but it's like these things had happened. There was trauma there beneath the surface, and I did have just some problems with understanding things that would come out at times. But I guess the next series of paranormal events that happened in my life was started when I was about 15.
In school.
On one way to a school, and I got involved with some people that were into polytheism. And some magic. I didn't realize on the magic. And as for polytheism, it's like, well, I was by that point an atheist. And I guess that's another interesting element, is that before this happened, I was a Christian. But sometime when I was 8, I became kind of an atheist. So I was like, I went from being Christian when I was 6, and then this happened in the amnesia, and I became atheistic. I still believed in God sometimes, but then sometimes I didn't. It was like touch and go. But definitely by the time I was 15, I had non-Christian views, kind of agnostic, atheistic, and I was into science fiction really heavy. But so I got a boyfriend that was a polytheist, and he had some friends that were polytheists, and he came from a polytheist family that actually worshipped, I'm not sure if it was Norse or German gods, and a pantheon as such. And to me, it all just sounded like some quaint mythology. That's all I thought at 15, is like, okay, well, you know, people can, you know, to me, all religious beliefs were silly, and so polytheism was just as silly as anything else and everything else. I was very atheistic, so I didn't see the danger of getting involved with someone, with some people who were into that, because, I mean, now as a Christian, it's like, it's no joke, it's no quaint mythology when people are worshipping a polytheistic pantheon of gods. It's like, those entities, sort of, not quite what they believe, but in fact do exist, and we would know them as fallen angels. And so, not realizing the danger I was getting into, I got involved with some people like that. And right from day one with this one man, who's an adult friend, who's older of my boyfriend, I started having what I believe now were false visions. But at the time, I didn't really know what was going on. And it took some time to even construct a theory.
What were you experiencing?
Well, it was little things. At first, it was little things and unease going on. So I wasn't exactly catching it. It's like I felt funny when I was around them sometimes. And it took a while to really notice the inconsistencies. Looking back, I've got it with a lot more clarity on what actually happened. So I have a semi-photographic memory and a pretty good one about some things, about what people have said and things. And so, like, for instance, one example with this man was visiting the school campus one time, and I noticed he had gotten glasses. He had not had glasses before, and so I went up and it's like he'd gotten glasses. I noticed he'd gotten glasses, and so I went up and I was like, oh, you got glasses. When'd you get glasses? And he's like, I've always had glasses. And a little red flag went off in my head. It's like, what? And it's like, you know, it's just like, okay, just kind of let it go. So kind of had a, you know, it just had a flow to it that, okay. But then I saw him again, and he didn't have glasses. And so I'm like, you know, oh, you're not wearing your glasses. And he's like, I don't have glasses. And I'm like, yeah, you do. And it's like, no, I have, like, perfect 20/20 vision. And I'm like, no, last time I saw you, you had glasses. And so where are they? And he's like, I don't have glasses. And I'm like, are you wearing contacts? He's like, no, you look. You see, I'm not wearing contacts. So I looked at his eyes, and I wasn't even quite sure I'd be able to tell. But I hadn't really looked at anyone's eyes while they were wearing contacts to know what it should look like. But I looked anyway, and it's like I didn't see what seemed to be contacts. And it's like, okay. That was one of the first things that came together. Another thing was his vehicle. It would change color. Sometimes he had a small blue pickup truck, light blue color. Sometimes he had a red pickup truck. Same exact truck, but it would change colors. I can actually tell you at this point, I can remember at one point climbing up into the bed of a blue truck, and then by the time I jumped out of the bed, it had turned red. So little things that I just barely noticed until they started building up into, okay, what is going on here? Because my internal memory on these things, and maybe you can understand why from what I shared just previously, is that I tried to pay close attention to things to my memories, because there was a point in time where I didn't have any, so as I got them, I paid close attention to them, and that stuck with me. And having a semi-photographic memory, when I was 15 and this was happening, it was little things at first that I let go in the moment, but eventually I started noticing some big inconsistencies, and it got to the point to where, like, one of the things, gone. Sometimes he would be one person, and sometimes he would be a person who looked pretty much identical, but his eyes were a slightly lighter shade of blue. He didn't have glasses. His hair was a slightly different color. His vehicle was a different color. Those two men with the same name, same appearance. And here was the other thing, is that when he would show up on campus, he was popular with a certain group of kids, and they would all hang around him. And it didn't matter which one was around. The same group of kids would come up and hang out with him and greet him and treat him as if he was the same person. So it actually got to the point where I asked my boyfriend then, you know, some questions about him when he was one way, and then another time when he was another way, the other way, I asked my boyfriend about him too, and it's like, okay, so here's a third party, and it's like both boyfriends, okay, it was the same person, but it became apparent there were two different versions of him also. And one of them affirmed the one, and the other one affirmed the other one. So it's like both of it seemed totally real. It's like, well, what's going on? And it actually, I can remember now with what happened, is there was actually a point where I was talking to him, this man, and it got to where he changed.
Right in front of you?
Right in front of me. When I looked away and then looked back, he changed. The hair slightly different color, the glasses and the eyes and everything. And it's like, no, he wasn't, this wasn't a person that was just playing a trick on me or something like that. It's like there seemed to be two different versions of the same person. Other people I knew that were there at this boarding school also were around him, and every time he was around, they treated him, no matter which one it was, they treat him like it was him. And so I seemed to be the only one that was noticing this. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know why, but I had a very deep-rooted fear of turning to anyone for help to try to explain to them what was going on, because for some reason I was scared of anyone thinking I might be crazy, and that was from a trauma that I wasn't even aware that had happened, but there was definitely fear of foreboding there of asking for help, because I didn't even know how to explain it. And yeah, there was one time I think I must have seen him change like 10 times within the period of like half an hour. I'd be talking to him, and I kind of look away, look down, you know, just take my eyes off him, look back, and he'd have changed. And it wasn't just glasses, it was eye color, it was a slight change in hair color, too.
And he had a wife also, right?
Yeah. And I met her, and that's an experience I remember was hanging out with both of them on campus one time we came to visit, and them both changing. And whereas the changes with him were minor, yet noticeable, the changes with her were major. We're talking height, we're talking facial structure, we're talking body weight. And one of them had a wife that was thinner, more delicate features. Her hair was a different color and a different wavier texture. And the other one, it's a woman dressed by the same name, still appearing to be his wife, dressed in the same outfit, but heavier and different hair color and kind of a broader face. And that experience was within a couple of hours one evening, and they must have changed, like, maybe I saw three or four times back and forth. But it was this one, and then that one, and then this one, and then that one.
So what exactly was going on that you're experiencing two different versions of the same person? It's almost like two different realities switching back and forth. How do you explain that now, looking back? What was going on?
Well, I think that this man, who I later found out practiced some sorcery, that he had a fallen angel that was causing me to have some sort of false vision experience when I was around him, to where I was having these false visions of a second version of him. It's like one of them was a real human man. okay? Mm-hmm. And that was his real wife. But the other version was entirely from a false vision. It was entirely fictitious. And it really wasn't even till years later. I mean, I guess I should say that, you know, this was really hard on me. I didn't feel like I could turn to anyone. I was trying to figure it out. The version that actually was a false vision, a fallen angel, I turned to that version, actually, for help. That's the one I opened up to and tried to talk to about it, because he actually was the fallen angel version, though, in those experiences, I think, was really had that false angel of light thing. You know, Satan transforms himself as an angel of light. I'm not saying it was Satan, but I am saying there was some sort of false light there about him. I mean, it was a deception, but there was a lot that was more endearing about him. In the false visions, he just seemed lighter. He seemed friendlier, nicer, wiser, gooder, you know, more moral and magnetic, charismatic. Yeah. And the other kids actually responded a lot more to him when he was around, being more interested in him. And to some extent, I guess there was some example set with them. They all seemed more fascinated by him and listened to him more closely than the other version. That was one of the only things I really could note between them. Another thing is if he touched me, put his hand on my shoulder or anything like that, there was a very, very strange feeling when that happened. Almost like there was some, I don't know, current of consciousness or something. It's like he touched me. It was like almost like some sort of loop closed. Not an electrical feeling, but I guess it almost seemed like it's like he was there and he knew my mind or something. Very weird. But years later, the way I came to interpret this was actually in line with some the beliefs I had developed out of reading Robert Heinlein novels and just reading a lot of science stuff. I had a belief system of a multiverse. And when I got older, I read Job, A Comedy of Justice, which I don't recommend to anyone. But that's a story about a man who just randomly is switching between different parallel universes, other dimensions, as some people put it. Where things will be slightly different. Someone else is president, or somebody lost a war, and so the world is slightly different, and things like that. But people respond to him as if he's someone from that world, you know, and they'll address him by a different name or something. But I thought, when I got older, I thought that's what had happened to me. But at the time, what happened, looking back, is I think I came under some pretty strong demonic oppression. I was confused. I didn't really turn to anyone, didn't feel like I could, I didn't have any answers, and I got depressed and confused and I think just oppressed demonically in a lot of ways. And my life really went downhill. But so when I look back on it now, it's like, well, I think this was something fallen angels caused of false visions, where the scene of the vision was impersonating real people. And everybody else was identical. You know, the friends I had there were identical. He was the only one that was different, him and his wife. Everybody else was the same. So it was like I later came to think it was a parallel universe that was just very slightly different, but he seemed to be the only thing that was kind of different in it, but for some reason I was perceiving it before I came back to Christ. That's what I was thinking. Very confused.
So in the visionary style experiences, when you were around one of these people, one version of this guy, we'll say, are you saying that everybody else in your reality, the kids and everything, were part of the vision?
Yeah.
And that's why they didn't notice it was different? It was all, it was an actual vision experience then when he was there.
Yeah, it couldn't have been that they were
unaware of this change somehow.
That's right. I mean, I was noticing it. It would have made sense. Others would have noticed it. So the only conclusion I could logically really draw was that they were also part of a second world, that they were second versions also. Of course, that's not what I think now. I think it was all a false vision. But when I look at all of this, after I became a Christian is when this started coming together. Before that, it was a lot of confusion and trauma and lost memories and oppression, there's a lot to piece together. But once I started reading the Bible and studying about what angels could do, to realize what fallen angels could do, to look at other paranormal things, I realized, okay, well, fallen angels, I mean, at first I thought demons and fallen angels must have caused this. And so that got me to realize, you know, it wasn't just him that changed. It was the other people around, you know, my friends, who also were doubled. There was a duplicate. But if in this experience he was duplicated, where there was a second version of him, there was a second version of my friends, that would also have to include the setting, too, the campus and where we were. Mm-hmm. And so it took years after becoming a Christian to really understand this, but it was an experience that was waking. It was daytime when it happened. I wasn't drugged. I wasn't in pain or being attacked. I was hanging out, listening to someone in their 40s with my friends who was talking about politics and poetry and the Renaissance kind of stuff and computers and eating pizza and drinking Pepsi. And it wasn't what happened in the experience that was traumatic so much as that the experiences were happening and, felt like I was losing my mind. But the whole experience was the setting, all of the characters in it. It was totally real seeming. There was no way to distinguish it from actual reality. And in fact, I actually, you know, looking back for years, thought that the false vision, the fallen angel version, was the real man, and the other one must have been the fake one or something.
So after becoming a Christian, studying the Bible, realizing the ability of angels to create visionary experiences that imitate reality or imitate fantasy, for that matter, as we talked about in the UFO abduction realm, the point is you were experiencing visionary experiences where the people involved were real people in your life. And that, of course, makes me think of what you were sharing earlier, that you had this experience when you were very young involving at least one of your parents and doctors whom you did not know, and a week of electroshock, bringing the idea forth that too could have been a visionary experience imitating your real life surroundings and people you knew.
Yes, that's right. In both cases, it seemed like it was real people. And as I learned more of the Bible, you know, God is just helping me to heal and process all of this. Like, I eventually did realize what happened in high school, which seemed to be switching between two different universes and a multiverse, as I interpreted it. Actually, that there were real people in that and there is no multiverse, you know. It meant that the experience when I was younger didn't have to be real people either, even though it was real and there was after effects that were very real and lasted. I don't think real people did it. I think it was a false vision. I think it was a stage with characters in this experience, a spiritual experience that had really very real effects on my life, trauma, but in both cases. But I don't think it was really the real people I saw in it. I think it was a very powerful and convincing deception. All very encompassing deception that was so real you couldn't distinguish it from reality. I mean, like I said, when I look back, for years I thought that the vision element was that version was the real one. That one had to be the real one because the other one seemed darker, as I was saying. The mm-hmm. one in the vision seemed lighter, while the one that was real seemed darker. So I thought, well, that must be the fake one. I was like, no, it wasn't. And he was actually almost this false messianic kind of figure in high school, looking back.
When you talk about polytheism and multiple universes, it seems like what you've been a victim of is that your experiences really weighed heavily into your worldview, into your interpretation of reality and even of theology for a while. That
yeah.
you were basing your worldview and your belief systems on experiences, without knowing that these experiences were fallen angel visions and tricks and attacks being concentrated on you.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I was also into reading the science fiction and everything like that. And I think that was the nature of the attack, is that they knew eventually I would piece that together and come to the conclusion that this had been something where I've been switching between two universes and the multiverse. But that's not what really happened. I don't believe there is a multiverse. I really wasn't fully able to... That's a belief that changed after I came back to Christ. So, but, you know, I'm kind of skipping something here, is that a lot of these memories got confused, and I guess when the ones about the electroshock came back would be something to talk about, because that happened when I was like 20, that those memories came back. I was actually having some problems with a situational depression, as I was in a bad situation and things were happening. I don't want to go into all of that, but there was some mention that I should get some sort of medical help, talk to a psychologist or something, and it was something that the idea terrified me, and I didn't know why. And, you know, actually, the last show we did, we were talking about what an abreaction is, that I end up having some level of abreaction and talking about what I thought would happen if I went to see a psychologist, which is namely that I thought that I would end up getting tied down and...
electroshocked again.
Yeah. Injected with drugs and electroshock, and I was shaking. Like, I was, like, okay, you can't see that on audio, but, I mean, jerking a little, talking about it. I was very afraid. It's like, no, I don't want to go there. And it's like a dam broke, and the memories started back. And when the memories came back, I wasn't a Christian. I didn't have any answers. I thought all of these memories were real. And I had every reason to think this had really happened to me, and it started making all sorts of things fit together, things I've talked about with, well, why, when I was growing up, was I having so much time where I was, you know, laying awake at night, and memories would come back, and I was thinking about them, and, you know, what was all of that? You know, it's like, and the Court Jester movie, and there was all sorts of other things, more than I could go into, that internally confirmed to me, yes, this happened. I really had amnesia. I really had electroshock. And there was a whole big mess inside that suddenly I realized was there. I realized why it was there. And in realizing that, is like I was realizing the truth about my life. That, yeah, this had happened to me. And I was furious, as I believed that real people had done this. I believed that my family had been involved in this, that they had lied to me. This feeling of foreboding and danger I'd felt and distance for years in ways that was just under the surface. I suddenly was fully aware of it and why it was there. All sorts of internal confirmation told me this was the truth, this had happened to me. And the memories I had were of people, my family being involved, and I was furious.
They put you through this.
I thought they put me through this and then kept it from me. I totally, really believed this had happened and that they had done this. And I confronted them. Exploded. I told them I hated them. Told my mother I hated her. I said some terrible things to her. No doubt I was going through a difficult time with all of this, but I said some horrible things to her. I know since, you know, things have been healed a lot since I came to Christ. But at the time when it happened, I was sure they had done this. I was sure I couldn't trust them, that they had done this. I was sure they were evil. I hated them. I didn't want to see them again. I was completely convinced they had done this and been involved and known. And I was not Christian. And that was a very troubled time in my life. There.
This is almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So this really had the potential to destroy your family relationships.
It did.
Yeah.
It did destroy them for a while. I didn't want much of anything to do with them, and I thought that they were lying to me. Then, I don't know, a lot of other things happened, and I'd have to say all of this was overwhelming. there is so much in my story that it's hard to go into all of it, but just to cover some main points, I guess the thing that's really significant is that when I came to Christ, I was reading the Bible. I had a real conversion experience, and I started reading the Bible. And I was reading in there, you know, about honoring your mother and father and about forgiveness. And so I was trying to keep relationship open with them, even though I still thought this had happened, that I was to forgive them. And try to love them and try to honor them to please God. That's how it started. And then a little later, you know, I was reading through the whole Bible, and this was the thing about, you know, witnesses, and to realizing I didn't really have anything in the way of witnesses or evidence that would actually hold up in court about this. And I started looking at my experiences in high school, where I had these two versions of the same person, and I realized demons and fallen angels had done this somehow. And as I got into studying the Bible more, over time, God worked a process where, you know, now eventually I've gotten to the point where I'm teaching on false visions and can show where this happens in the Bible, where angels can cause these vision experiences that feel real, and that they can be of just about anything, and that includes impersonating real people that you know in the vision, or aliens, or whatever it may be, but that they feel totally physically real, and that there can be physical after effects that stay with you. And so somewhere in that process, it clicked. And I was actually able to talk to my parents and explain, you know, I think I know what happened because you've denied this. You've said you didn't do this. I think I actually believe you now. Because, yeah, praise the Lord.
Praise God.
Praise Jesus. Thank you. Because it got to the point where I was actually able to explain it to my mother that I think I really did have an experience when I was a kid. I think I really did have amnesia, but I don't think you did this. I think fallen angels caused me to have a false vision. That's something the Bible says angels can do, that they feel physical, and that they impersonated you, and they caused me to have this experience. It really happened to me, but it wasn't real, and it wasn't you, and I can believe you now. And that's what Jesus Christ has done for me, is healed my family, and it's a slow process, but, like, you know, we just spent Christmas at my parents, and we had a great time, I think. We had fun.
Yeah.
And there was a time 10 years ago where it looked like that, something like never. That would never happen, because I didn't want anything to do with them, and I felt like I hated my mother and my dad and my family, and I was in a place where I wanted nothing to do with them ever again, didn't think I'd ever trust them, and I came to Jesus Christ. It took some time, but slowly he reached me, he brought me truth, he turned this around so I could understand what had happened and found the answers in the Bible to understand the truth. This was something fallen angels could do. My parents were never denying it because they were lying. They were denying it because they never did that. And there was a dark point where I might have had nothing to do with them, hardly at all, for the rest of my life. But Jesus Christ entering into my life intervened, and he turned this around. For now, I love my family. I love my parents. I know they didn't do these things. I have faith in God and in the Bible, and I know them, and they love me, and we have a relationship. I have a great, loving family, and the devil tried to destroy that, but almost just booby-trapped my life from a young age to destroy that at some point. But God's more powerful.
Yeah.
His truth brings healing. It brings love. And the devil tries to destroy love. You know, God is love. And the love between family members, you know, if the devil can, the devil will try to destroy that love, because God is love. The devil tries to take God right out of the picture through deception, and these were powerful deceptions. The Lord saw the problem and healed things. So praise the Lord. I can't say enough of what he's done for me. That I have my parents back. you know.
Yeah, I was there, and we had a great time with your family. And it was obviously, it's a wonderful relationship. And to hear you tell what's gone on in the past, it would not be believable that you'd be to this point by now. I mean, it is honestly nothing short of miraculous if you were under a belief system that they had done this to you at some point. I love the part where, you know, even when you still thought it was true, though, you decided to begin to obey God's word. Forgive them, honor your mother and father, attempt reconciliation. And in, this wasn't a matter of the truth exactly setting you free. It was a matter of, I'm going to obey God first. Freedom and truth came later in this case, and it was still, I said, from what I've seen compared to what we've talked about tonight, witness that it is a miraculous healing, to where the attack, what Satan had going on here, was to destroy that family love and even make many people probably disobey one of the most basic commandments that's been with us for almost all of human history, at least as long as God has been strongly involved with giving us his word. That's amazing. It was really great to see.
Praise God.
I don't know where to go from here, other than, I mean, is there any other paranormal experiences you feel should be covered?
Yes, there were three abduction experiences I remember from, in my 20s, after I became, one was before and after, two were after I came back to Christ. So.
What happened with the first one?
It seemed like it was a sexual one. It was like on all fours with a bunch of grays around me, and there might have been some carrying or moving me or something. But that one is the one I probably remember the least of. But there was one after I became a Christian where I thought I was having a miscarriage, and it would have been a really early miscarriage, so it was kind of on the line, but I was sure I was pregnant, and I was having a miscarriage, and it was very kind of dreamish, but just slightly more real than a dream. There was a tall gray there, and he had like this rainbow around him, and it's like, I was in the bedroom, my bedroom, but it was still light around somehow. There was like light coming out from behind him, and this rainbow and everything, and this gray was telepathically trying to say something to me about, you know, I wasn't really having a miscarriage, but they were doing to take the, you know, maybe they were going to take care of him, be safe with them, and I was a Christian at that point, and I already knew demons, you know, these aliens were demons, that's as much as I understood then, and that they were liars, and I just tried to ignore it, and I'm just like, oh, this is such bull.
Good for you.
That's what I said, and it was, and I didn't believe it, I didn't buy it for a minute, but they tried that on me. The thing is, I know they try that on a lot of women. Things like that, you know, but it's like, I know they're liars. It's like they, you know, just, I was aware at that point that, you know, I'd had these other experiences, these multiverse experiences, and how real they seemed. I mean, this was just like this slightly dreamish thing with this rainbow there and this gray, and it's just like, it was just a demon, and I knew it was lying, and so, I mean, that I don't really remember much more than that. I think there might have been a couple other ones that were there, like, touching me or something, but on the left side. But then the third experience, that was the one that actually felt more real. It was more physical, but it felt physical, but I felt drugged, which made a little hazy, and I know I've described that one on interviews before.
About the implants or the...
Yeah, I talked about really implants, what I used to think were implants, but yeah, that's the one where it's like there were three grays, and I seemed to be in a concrete room or something, and it did feel physically real, but I also felt drugged. But that's the one where they put a drill in my mouth, and then later I found what I believe is actually a tori there, a little bone growth under the gum line. It just sticks out just a little bit, but for a while, I thought that was an implant, but it did show up to where I noticed it after that happened. So, you know, I'm not opposed to the idea that they could cause a little bone growth like that, or I guess it could have been there and I never noticed it, but I have a hard time entirely believing that. But, I mean, fallen angels can cause physical illness or growth or something like that, they could do that. But yeah, that was the one with the drill. And then later I thought that was an implant there. And it was so painful I passed out. And I've talked about that one before. But, you know, I knew they were demons in that. I was still just kind of fascinated, I think, with the experience.
Careful with that fascination. How long has it been since you had anything you would refer to as a alien-related or abduction experience?
Well, that was the last time I had a little abduction experience.
How long ago?
Well, that was over 6 years ago. Gosh, that was 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was 7 years ago. And then there was that one time I had what seemed to be a demonic dream. We were together, and I woke up in bed. I thought I was waking up in bed, but I was actually in a dream. And there was, like, this head of an alien gray, like, there in the bed or something. Oh. You remember I told you about that when it happened?
Yes, very.
That was creepy. That felt demonic, but that was the last thing like that with aliens, wasn't it? Well, there was that time I woke up and there was a triangle that had been perfect equilateral triangle removed from just the upper layer of skin, not enough to cause bleeding. Remember that? That was like the night before last day's conference.
Oh, wow. We must have been so busy. I don't know. I don't remember that. I'm sorry. Well, do you remember that as an alien abduction dream or event, though, or
no? I just woke up and there was no. I just woke up with a triangle. I didn't have a dream or an experience. I just woke up with a triangle.
Where?
It was right here. I told you about it when it happened. I can't believe you don't remember that.
Well, that's nice, dear. Got a conference to put together, so later. You know, I'm sure it was that.
Yeah, they do a talk, and yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, gee.
You don't remember that, really?
Really, no. I don't have a photographic memory, or you know how guys are. I've slept since then.
I woke up with a perfect equilateral triangle removed from the upper layer of my skin, and you don't remember that.
I didn't do it. No. No. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, this is totally when abductees get married. But you don't remember the triangle? You're so weird.
Dip Scolder and... Oh, no.
Mulder and Scully?
Right.
Yeah, that's who we are.
Yeah. You should see the stuff they talk about off camera in their relationship. I guess it's just as weird.
Yeah, like what was that one episode where he had passed out and she was like watching him pass out, and what was it? He started singing something.
Shaft.
Yeah, he started singing Shaft. He's like, I was not.
I did not.
Yes, you were.
Can't dig it. They say this cat Shaft is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. I'm talking about Shaft.
Yeah, well, that episode was where they were both recounting the incidences with the vampires. And they were both giving highly exaggerated versions, and the truth was actually somewhere in between. They were both right, and they were both wrong in a lot of their retellings. Memory is somewhat subjective and selective.
Okay, well, I'm sure Joe remembers the triangle that I told him about,
he
too.
He was there in Roswell. Maybe he did, I don't know.
No, it wasn't in Roswell. It was before last days.
In Nashville. Oh, I remember. I had the place wrong.
You remember it now? You do?
Sure, honey. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's about it on my story of testimony of paranormal experiences. I mean, I had a few times I experienced tingling trying to tap into earth magic and some sort of white magic Wicca sort of thing. And I'm sure there are other things if I thought about it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's other things if I thought about it, too. Like, I remember once I got blamed and my friends were mad at me for blowing out a light bulb in their house with my psychic powers when I was a teenager. Guilty.
Okay. Yeah. I guess, and you've had a lot of paranormal experiences. I mean, there are a lot of little things, but those, I think we've covered the big things.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of how they relate to my perspective on some things today.
Yeah, it seems like you get right with the Lord and you quit fooling around with that stuff. And
yeah,
the little ones definitely go up. But hopefully, as some of what you've talked about today, the big ones happen less and less, with less frequency, less severity, and God is glorified in our more peaceful lives over time.
Amen.
And sometimes people get to remain living a peaceful life and just move on with the Lord and their life in church. And I think something common to both of us, in fact, is that sometimes you get called to go right back into the field of ministry that you were delivered from, but as a minister. That's you've given all kinds of examples of your testimony, wild experiences with fallen angels and false visions, how it's disrupted your life, your health, your family, your sanity, your well-being. And I can see where a lot of people would just want to throw up their hands and say, okay, enough, I'm glad that's done with in my life and want to move on. But what's neat, or maybe even complimentary, what we have in common is that you've kind of responded to a call to take what your life has been, or what you've been through with it, turn it around, and teach it as theology, and minister to other people who are possibly having similar paranormal attacks, and bring a little truth and hope into their lives. Like, you've, since we've gotten together, you've written two books on these subjects alone.
Yeah, from out of my personal experiences and trying to understand them and for answers, I really hit the book hard.
You've had to dig into the Bible to say, what is all this?
Yeah, God is leading me through a healing process. And I guess it's safe to say I've learned a lot in reading the Bible, and the Holy Spirit's guided me into truth. And so that's what I try to share, to try to help other people who are under deception, who are experiencing harassment and attack by fallen angels, or the demonic, to take what I the truth that I feel God has shown me, the truth that's given me freedom and understanding, and to impart that, share that with others, try to teach biblical truth.
Well, that's a wonderful way to turn your life around, or to see God turn your life around, to go through that much tragedy and pain in some ways, in many ways, and then use that as a building block for ministry and for teaching other people how to get free from their bad experiences. I know you've given a lot of your life to teaching what you know and taking your experiences and digging through the Bible to lay it out theologically in a way that makes sense to people, that they can follow, like your books, for example, right?
Yeah.
Got two books that have come partly as a result of just digging through the Bible to understand your own experiences. I know, but A Modern Guide to Demons and Fallen Angels, and then The Bible, Physics, and the Ability of Fallen Angels, subtitled The Alien Abduction Agenda.
Phenomenon.
What?
Phenomenon.
Doop, do, 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 do.
Phenomenon?
Doop, do, do, do.
Phenomenon.
Doop, do, 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 do.
Okay.
Yeah, we're corny. Okay, you fell for that, huh?
That's good. Yes, two books. Actually, three, but those are the two on the paranormal and fallen angel topics.
So, try to look over this from a larger picture. You started out with extremely traumatic, rough childhood experiences, really.
Yeah, well, it could have been worse.
Yeah, but it's still pretty rough. But I don't know, I guess what I was getting at is that we have in common the alien abduction ministry that we work with, that we do. But a lot of your experiences, actually, that they really had nothing to do with alien abduction, per se. That's almost a cursory field. What you've had is other experiences, I would say, that in one matter of looking at it, just give you a point of view that also helps you have insight and some explanatory value into, yes, the alien abduction experiences, but the alien abduction experience is only a microcosm or kind of a niche market. Your overall views seem to be comprehensive on a lot of other fields of paranormal activity.
That's right. I mean, to me, it's different versions of the same activity. I mean, this is what fallen angels are doing all across the board on paranormal activity. I guess one thing about my experiences bringing it into the alien abduction field with some of the insights from my experiences is, well, with alien abductees, a lot of times I think there's a feeling of being drugged, or the experiences can be kind of hazy. They're somewhere between a dream and something that feels physical.
And the victim is powerless.
Yeah, and, you know, with some of the experiences I've had with fallen angels, especially the ones in high school, I mean, these were waking, I wasn't drugged, what was disturbing about it wasn't exactly, what was happening in it most of the time, although there were some things that I didn't go into, but there were some things that were disturbing or upsetting that happened, but for the most part it's just that it was happening, and I was... on how I noticed it and the effect it had, that was traumatic, very traumatic. But it's not that way with alien abduction, to where you're awake and see what they do. I mean, because the idea is, well, you're taken somewhere else, and they're trying to convince you that they're aliens and everything. But with this, it was more of a multiverse-oriented kind of deception. And it was people that I knew. So if you can see, what I can see is that if they're capable of doing that, they can pretty much just pick the characters. They can pick the setting. So I guess that's why originally in that book I used the analogy of a holodeck kind of experience. It's like they just program in whatever they want. It seems real, but when it's over, it just goes away. It just disappears because it's an experience, a vision.
In one level or in one experience, a person may feel that alien beings are taking them on a UFO to another planet or to an underground base. And they see all kinds of creatures, not only aliens, but even there's reports of dead relatives or celebrities sometimes involved in it.
Yeah.
But from the way you're describing it, the brushstrokes you're giving it, is that they really can pick the playing field entirely. The characters can be your own family. They can be famous people.
Yeah, and it all seems totally physically real in some of these experiences. I mean, I know some people, you know, try to say, well, it didn't really happen, or false memories. I know when I was going through remembering all of it, you know, someone brought up false memory syndrome to me, and it's like, no, this happened. This explains stuff in my life that it's hard to explain it to you, but there's so much internal confirmation. This explains so much about me and why I am like I am and why I've been like I've been, and I know this happened. This is the truth. You know, it wasn't just something that was a memory later, and I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I do think that something like it does happen also, but that's something that's different. But now these are real traumatic experiences, that they just were deceptive experiences that were not truly what I was led to believe they were.
They were tailored to be believable to you at the time.
Yeah.
And that's probably true across the board, whether it's, I know you used the example of Bigfoot, fairies.
Orbs, ghosts. I have known so many people throughout my life that have had just a variety of experiences, from fairies and mermaids and weird glowing netting floating in the air and UFOs and abductions and ghosts, and it's all fallen angels. And they have a false vision of a ghost, or, you know, people see it with their eyes, or they see things really moving, or an orb, or whatever, some glowing thing. It's all fallen angels.
And there can be evidence after the fact.
Yeah, well, the Bible speaks about those false visions. And they're mentioned in the Bible. We see the abilities of angels in the Bible that fallen angels have, and they can cause false miracles, lying signs, lying wonders, and that would be the physical after effects. But yeah, I mean, this is all covered in my books, but it's like, yeah, I looked in the Bible for answers to what happened, see what the Bible actually said. And my conclusion is not that there is a multiverse, or that there are real aliens, or that just because you have an experience that seems to have real people in it, even real people that you know, that actually had to really be those real people. Because, I mean, they can appear and cause you to see pretty much whatever they want, to deceive you, because they hate us. You know. They just want to wreck people's lives, make them miserable.
Well, they tried to, with you, they took an extent, they succeeded for a while.
And God is more powerful.
Right.
Jesus Christ is the Lord of the universe.
Has turned it around again.
Praise the Lord. I don't know if there's much left to say on this episode, but I think that gives people at least a general idea of who I am and some of the things I've been through, where I'm coming from. That's kind of what we were doing with these first episodes,
yeah.
Just kind of an introduction. Who are we, and why do we do this, and
Yeah, maybe knowing what's happened in our lives, you might better understand our motivation for wanting to help other people who are going through similar events.
Yeah, if we can, as much as we can. I mean, Jesus Christ has helped us, and he can help you.
That's what we keep coming back to. But God turned it around, and through Jesus, the truth was known. The hurts have been healed.
Praise the Lord. Okay, so I guess that's it for episode 2 of Coffee with Alien Resistance.
Yes, then this episode was made possible by coffee.
And the good Lord. Okay, bye. Jazz and Egg Wall, that's our team. Step and set the party, disrupt the whole scene. When it comes to beats, well, I'm on beat. I like my sugar with coffee and green. But I gotta keep it going full steam. Too sweet to be sour, too nice to be me. When on the top guy style, I'm not too keen. Try to change the world, I'm a plot and scheme. Mario C likes to keep it clean. Wanna shine like D-Zone TV. Fun rapping, cause that's my dream. Dream. Moon D for sticking to me. I'm going to go to the next one.